Guarantee you it is not, and then we'll find out who has the most obnoxious ring tone in here. Please do not let that happen today, okay, so we don't disrupt the court. Also, when the court is inside a session, the doors will be closed, and if you need to leave after the first case, the doors will be open for a short amount of time. You may leave during that time, okay? Thank you for everybody's patience going through student security today. It is there for as well as your safety, as well as everybody that's involved in this today, so we really appreciate that. So with that being said, that should be the end of it. Make sure we all follow the rules, and we'll have a great time. Thank you very much.
The Nebraska Court of Appeals is now in session. May all who come here be heard. May truth and justice be served by what we do here.
Thank you. You may be seated. Good morning. My name is Mike Pirtle. I am the Chief Judge of the Nebraska Court of Appeals, and we are very pleased to be here at the University of Nebraska at Omaha. I'm joined this morning by two of my fellow judges. To my right, Judge Frankie Moore of North Platte, and to my left, Judge Francie Reedman of Gretna. We have two cases this morning. We're going to take them in the order they've been listed. Before we do that, I just want to say that this is the first time we have been to UNO since we started this program in 2012. We've been to all of the other state colleges since then, and some of the schools we've been to twice. So I set out to accomplish this a few years ago, and I want to acknowledge the staff here at UNO, but especially Professor Jonathan Alvarado, who happened to be the advisor for my two daughters, Jackie and Stacy, who attended here and graduated. So Jonathan, again, I really appreciate you helping us be here today. So thank you very much. With that, we will get started. And our first case is State versus Wright. Counsel may approach. Is the appellant ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Judge. May it please the court, my name is Sam Bowie, appearing on behalf of the appellant, Chad W. Wright. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
So noted.
The central issue on appeal is that there was insufficient evidence to convict the appellant of disturbing the peace and trespass under the Lincoln Municipal Code. Mr. Wright was charged with disturbing the peace and trespass on May 19, 2021, following an incident at the Office Depot in Lincoln. When Mr. Wright entered the store, he had a conversation with an employee for about 3 minutes. The employee told him that the store had masks available and that the city of Lincoln had a mask mandate in effect, but that she was not requiring Mr. Wright to put one on. Mr. Wright exited the store and re-entered a few moments later and walked about 4 feet into the store and asked if a manager was present. The second time Mr. Wright was in the store's camera footage shows that he was in the store for a total of about 1 minute and 32 seconds. Mr. Wright and the store's highest ranking employee, Timothy Homstad, discussed the mask requirement from about 25 feet away from each other. Over the course of the conversation, the store manager asked Mr. Wright to leave the store. Mr. Wright left the store as the manager followed him out, and Mr. Wright drove away.
How many times was he asked to leave before he actually did?
There's confusion in the record. There's conflicting evidence as to how many times Mr. Wright was asked to leave, and also the manner in which that request was communicated. I would point to Mr. Homstad's testimony, in which he states that he was, at one point he states that he was not demanding that Mr. Wright leave. He testified that he said he could do the shopping for Mr. Wright if he didn't want to wear a mask, and that Mr. Wright was free to leave if he didn't like what was going on. But it's difficult to tell, and that's one of the issues on appeal, is how many times exactly was he told, and was this communication to Mr. Wright by the store manager an actual communication that he was trespassing, as opposed to something lesser, that he was free to leave if he didn't like what was going on.
What's the range of numbers?
The range of numbers, I believe at one point Mr. Homstad testified that he asked over a dozen times. There are, I believe Ms. Pickrell, the employee at the entrance to the store, testified about 4 or 6 times. But again, the nature of this communication to Mr. Wright is unclear, as there's conflicting testimony in the record.
Well, counsel, if there's conflicting testimony, don't we defer to the fact finder on issues of credibility?
That's correct. On issues of credibility, the court would defer to the fact finder. However, it's not so much an issue of credibility. We're not talking about one person's testimony versus another. It's Mr. Homstad's own testimony here, where he says at one point that he asked Mr. Wright to leave for the first time about 4 to 6 seconds before he actually left. At other points in his testimony, he says over a dozen. And so it's not an issue of credibility. It's an issue of this evidence from the same witness's testimony. Is it sufficient to support a finding of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt?
With regard to the trespass charge?
Correct.
How would you characterize the communication from your client to the store employees?
The communication in the first instance when he entered the store, the testimony of the employee he spoke to said it was in a normal conversational tone. The testimony from the store manager of when he was in the store the second time testified that I believe they were speaking in elevated voices, that it was loud, that it was, I don't know if it's his exact words, but essentially the gist of it would be that it was an angry altercation. However, I would also point to the fact that the store manager and Mr. Wright were 25 feet away or so and essentially had to be yelling at each other from across the room, which would explain the raised voices.
But at some point there was also a physical confrontation, is that correct?
That is disputed. The store manager testified that there was, that Mr. Wright poked him in the chest as he was exiting the store, and outside the store, just outside the store, even sucker punched, I believe, were his words. However, there is video evidence in the record on Exhibits 1 and 2, which together show just about, if not the entire interaction between the two men, and does not show any physical contact was made.
It didn't show anything outside the store, though, correct? This was all inside the store.
Correct. There was also, I believe, Exhibit 2, the video showed the interaction outside of the store up until Mr. Wright drove away. And so with the Exhibit 1 from inside the store and Exhibit 2 put together, it shows just about the whole, if not the whole, interaction.
How did the trial court interpret that video?
The trial court, in the order, the trial court found that, and I want to make sure I get it right here, it says on page 3, the store video further shows the defendant manipulating his phone during the interactions. As Mr. Homestead continues towards the defendant, he backs up and out of the store. The video shows defendant to raise his left arm and extend it toward Mr. Homestead and is observed to stumble. And so the trial court interpreted the video as showing that he was extending his arm. It doesn't, in the order, I don't believe that the trial court found that there was actually a touching on the video, just that extension of the arm.
So what element of the disturbing the peace charge do you contend is missing here in the evidence?
I would contend that the element of the disturbance, that to disturb someone's peace under the applicable municipal code provision here is to throw into a state of disorder. Here, in this case, the testimony was that there was a customer who was able to proceed to checkout while Mr. Wright was having this interaction with the store manager. I would argue that shows that there was not being thrown into disorder or disrupting the regular business of the store as the customer was able to proceed to checkout.
But wasn't there also evidence that a customer was frightened and didn't want to leave the store during this incident?
Correct. This was the store manager's testimony. And important to note that it wasn't the actual person who was at the store. And the Exhibit 1 footage of the closed caption TV from the store never shows that the customer ever went behind the counter, and after Mr. Wright and the store manager left, in fact, the store footage shows that the customer walked straight out the front doors, didn't look around to see if Mr. Wright was still there, which I would argue shows that there was not this frightened reaction as described by the store manager.
You're into your rebuttal time. Do you want to reserve the rest of it?
I would. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. Counsel?
I just moved that, sorry.
Could we ask for you to take the mask off just for the oral argument, please?
Apologize, Your Honor, I forgot.
Thank you.
I do wear that.
Which is interesting, we're talking about a mask issue today, right?
It is, and I do wear it even in trial court, but I had intended to take it off for this part of today. My name is Connor Reuter. Thank you, Your Honors, and please support. I am here on behalf of the state of Nebraska, who prosecuted this case. By and through the city attorney's office in Lincoln. This was charged as two violations of the Lincoln Municipal Code, count one being disturbing the peace of the manager, Timothy Homestead, and or Office Depot. Count two was trespass at Office Depot. I would suggest to the court that the record is clearly supports the conviction on both matters.
Do you think it matters that the store manager gave differing testimony as to the number of times he asked the defendant to leave the premises?
Differing, I didn't understand that he was internally consistent to himself. Maybe I'm not remembering that correctly. To me, on the ultimately, no. I think that that's part of what trial courts are used to, is that dynamic events sometimes have less than crystal clear recollections, and sometimes they come into the record in various ways. What I think is important on the trespass is he did enter the store. He was immediately contacted by Ms. Pickerel and informed him that he needed to put a mask, that there were masks, and that he couldn't shop without a mask. Ms. Pickerel says that they had a discussion, and in fact it was just represented in the first part of this argument, that there were normal conversational tones between Mr. Wright and Ms. Pickerel at that first interaction. Curiously, if you read his testimony, he says he said nothing on that first interaction, that he respected her request that he put a mask on or leave, and he left. He testifies there was no interaction with Ms. Pickerel. There's been a representation that this isn't a credibility issue. I would suggest to the court it's nearly always a credibility issue. But in that instance, Ms. Pickerel says we had a discussion. It was normal conversational tones. I told him he needs a mask. He's going to shop. He left. He says, she told me I need a mask if I'm going to shop. I respected that, and I left without conversation. Credibility, I would suggest the trial court had that information and used it to judge credibility. He came back. At that point, he knew, if I don't have a mask on, I can't come in this establishment. He came back. Right there, done. He entered the store without permission. He was not just on notice because there was a citywide mask mandate. He was on actual notice because he had just been told by Ms. Pickerel, can't shop in here if you don't have a mask on. He respected that and he left. And then he decided, I don't want to respect that anymore. And he made the decision to re-enter the premises against their wishes, against the mask mandate, without a mask.
He came in to have a discussion with the manager. Is that correct?
He did. That's what he says. And he did have a discussion with the manager. And his discussion was, call the police. I want to talk about whether or not you can have a mask mandate and make me wear a mask. I would suggest to the court, that's trespassing. No different than if a business puts up a sign that says no firearms allowed and somebody comes in and wants to talk about that policy. Coming in with a firearm on your person is not permitted. You are a trespasser at that point. Call from outside, write a letter to the owner, do anything other than stand in that store, contrary to a citywide mask mandate. I'm not going to get into the benefits or necessity of a mask mandate, but there was one in place, and at the time that they were put in place, there was a belief that standing unmasked in a business was somewhat endangering to employees and or other patrons. Whether people like and agree with that or not isn't the question. He was told you can't be here without a mask. He initially respected it and left, and then he re-entered. That right there is trespass. Now, add on to it that what he did was continue to refuse to leave when Mr. Holmstad told him, and Ms. Pickerel even says four or five times Mr. Holmstad told him to leave and he didn't leave. At some point he did leave, and when he left, he did so in the fashion that was disturbing. Both his re-entry was disturbing, his demeanor while he was within the store was disturbing. It was disturbing to Mr. Holmstad, both in his personal and in his managerial capacity. He said he had fear for his employees and the customers. He said that it disrupted the business operation of his store. That was parroted by, I can't remember if it was Dalton Gregory, Gregory Dalton, but the employee that was in the back of the store. He was with a customer. He was distracted by the angry tones. He was on alert. Is this going to go somewhere worse? None of that is what an Office Depot or any employer in the city of Lincoln ought to have to put up with. You're not allowed to be here. Leave. If you have a beef with it, raise it appropriately. That's not standing in my store calling me
names.
Names, which curiously none of us want to say out loud in this setting. Now, are those words in and of themselves tantamount to disturbing the peace? You don't have to answer that. That wasn't our argument, and you don't have to answer it. But it sure does change it, because it wasn't delivered with, you know, soft kisses. Hey, you big ogre. It was yelled at a guy who was angry, who was saying, call the police, I don't need to leave, I'm coming back in your store, even though I know full well without a mask on, your city views me a danger to your employees and your patrons. Right or wrong on the mask mandate isn't the question. He knew he wasn't allowed to be there, and he went in a fashion that was prohibited by the business. What he did there was disturbing. He called him names, yes. I'm not resting my case on that. I don't think this court has to touch whether or not those words in and of themselves mean anything, but they're part of the picture, for sure.
What about the physical altercation? Is any of that caught on the video exhibits?
My recollection of Mr. Holmstad's testimony is that he believed that the poke was viewed, that this was an interesting line of questioning because it was hard to make my point known, but my understanding is from Mr. Holmstad that although you cannot see the contact between Mr. Wright's finger and Mr. Holmstad's person, the time period where that would have occurred is captured on the video. but that the time period where the sucker punch was not in the video. It was my understanding of Mr. Homestead's testimony, and I don't think that's inconsistent with what the trial court found, but regardless of what the video does or doesn't show to anybody watching it today, the trial court was not unreasonable in its interpretation of it, and I think that, oh, I don't know the quote, State v. Osborne, I think 313 Nebraska 726, is a fairly recent case where an appellate court discusses a video that the appellate court watches and decides whether or not that which the fact finder said the video said was reasonable. Now, like that, and in that case, they said yes, that whether or not anybody watching it fresh would see it the same way, what the fact finder saw was a reasonable interpretation of it.
Well, and is a physical altercation necessary under the disturbing the peace?
It's not. And just like in the Osborne case, that video wasn't the only thing that was supportive of the conviction, and just like that here, with or without either of those, the poke or the sucker punch, this was a disturbance. It is noteworthy, though, that when it was first called in, the officer testified it was called it as an assault. I mean, Mr. Homestead is consistent in that this occurred, and I would suggest typical in not being able to tell you the precise amount of minutes or exactly where the people's feet were when these various events occurred. This was a disruption that he was physically, the other person initiated physical contact with Mr. Homestead. All of that is completely consistent in the record.
And assault again, wasn't charged here, was it?
It was not. It was originally dispatched as that the complainant complained of an assault, which again is consistent with the testimony and consistent with what the court found on the video. I think this idea that this is not an issue of credibility just is not true. The trial court's job is to watch the witnesses, listen to the witnesses, consider the evidence as it comes in, as it's delivered. And part and parcel of deciding a verdict is to determine who's more credible. What do I believe happened based on the credibility of the witnesses as I observe them? And I think that this court's deference there needs to be quite large. And the record evidence before the court does support both convictions, with or without an actual sucker punch. But again, Mr. Homestead testified that that occurred. Mr. Wright testified it didn't, but Mr. Wright also said he didn't have a conversation with Ms. Pickerel. She says it happened. Mr. Homestead saw it happen. Mr. Wright said, I told him as I was leaving, I am going to call your manager. And in fact, he said something very different on the video that they put into evidence, the cell phone video. He called him an idiot and said, you're going to get fired, Tim. All of that does go to credibility, and this is about credibility, and that was up to the fact finder to determine and to weigh, and respectfully not for this court to redetermine and reweigh. I would suggest to the court that both that the district court order ought to be affirmed in all respects, including whether or not there's enough to determine an effective assistance of counsel. I think there's not.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time does the appellant have for rebuttal?
1 minute, 22 seconds, Your Honor.
Okay, counsel.
Thank you. I would like to briefly address a part of my argument that was not brought up in my original argument here, which is the element of trespass here. The city code provision involved here requires an actual communication that the defendant is trespassing or not welcome to be there. This, I would argue, implies the existence of an element in that provision that requires the defendant to leave within a reasonable time after this communication is made. It doesn't look like there's any Nebraska authority on point, but an Indiana Court of Appeals decision, I believe, is quite applicable. In that case, a security guard found the defendant on the premises. The security guard informed the defendant they were trespassing, they needed to leave. The defendant in that case started backing away and became argumentative, and then at that point, the security guard restrained the defendant. The Court of Appeals of Indiana held that there was not a reasonable time given for the defendant to leave after this request was communicated.
Counsel, is that case cited in your brief?
Yes, that would be the Lemon versus State.
Thank you.
And I would argue the facts here are similar, and Mr. Wright was left within a reasonable time, as the entire incident the second time in the store was no more than a minute and 32 seconds.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you both, counsel, for being here. We will take the matter under advisement, and you are excused.